All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Questlove Supreme. I'm your host, Questlove. With me, we have Team Supreme. We have the one and only Sugar Steve.
Wow.
You should be Stone Steve.
What?
I think you need a new moniker. I mean, you're coming over this.
I thought you said you should be Stone right now, Steve. I was like, you know, mission accomplished there. Stone Steve, I think I'm good with Sugar Steve. It's a brand now.
He's made a brand out of it. It's like a whole way of life.
Yeah.
There you go. Network.
I'm good.
As long as you're still living, that's all I care about, you know.
I'm living.
I'm Paid Bill. It's also in the house. How's it going?
Fantastic.
Life is fantastic. All right, Laia, how are you?
Yo, for real, I was real calm, but then I saw her face and I got really happy. I'm excited. I missed that face.
We've missed the shit out of me. Yeah. Absolutely. Fonticolo, how are you?
I can leave.
Chilling, man. Chilling.
Leave and come back.
No, you wait.
Oh, no. Stay right here.
You guys get all excited again.
Just for the whole hour and a half, just come back in.
Yeah,
ladies and gentlemen, what can I say? Our guest today, well, for starters, she's sold over 30 million units of her albums in the last two decades. I believe there are 10 in total. Mm-hmm. But besides all that, she personally, I will say that she's one of my favorite voices in music. And
thank you.
Not in that, I like niche, unusual sounding singers, but it's rare to hear any trace of soul or life in such a technically perfect culture that we live in now, where everything is overdone and overwrought and too perfect. Like, she has a pulse in her voice, and that's what I always loved about her. Welcome to Questlove Supreme, Macy Gray.
Hello, sweetheart. How you doing? Yay for us.
Where are you right now?
I'm in my bed in Los Angeles, California, sitting on my bed. The internet in my house is best in my room. So when I have stuff like this, I get in the bed.
I see. Well, I'm in my bed too. We're all, I thought we were all in our beds, but.
Close enough.
We can all get in the
close
bed.
Close enough. Wait, before I ask anything, this is what I have to know. So I'm getting my first real house hooking up right now.
Wow.
And the one thing that the one idea I'm stealing from you is the idea of the chocolate room.
Mm-hmm.
When I first went to your house, you had a room dedicated all brown, mm-hmm. all chocolate, which do you still maintain that in your house? It's been a while since I've ever been back to your crib. I'm just asking, like, is chocolate room still a thing?
I got a chocolate room, but you have to, it's very important. You have to get the paint suede-ed or else it'll just look like doo-doo brown. You got to get like a proper painter and tell them you want it suede-ed.
Wow.
Suede-ed.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, that's a thing. Looks,
yeah, it's a thing.
Okay.
Fly.
Write that down.
Okay.
So I was about to say, damn, it's been so long since we rapped to each other. You know, now I feel like we're reintroducing ourselves to each other. I mean, of course, in your circle, I always heard people call you Nat, but I know that Macy is your stage. How did you get that name? I never asked you, like, how did you get the name Macy Gray?
I saw it on a mailbox. I guess there is a real Macy Gray. So, you know,
Macy Gray on a mailbox?
It's an old dude in Ohio. You know how, like, back in the day, so everybody used to make up their name. Like, now everybody uses
even
their
now.
Name. I know, but when I was coming up, everybody had a fake name. Like, Method Man, everybody. And true. So I thought I had to make up a name. So I saw this name on the mailbox, and I was like, you know, that sounds good, you know. I mean, I saw it on a mailbox when I was much younger, but when I decided to make up my name, I went to that name.
Wait, have you ever looked up the actual Macy Gray?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's more than one.
I mean, the one from the mailbox.
Yeah, he lived across the street.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean,
that's how I saw it.
So somewhere your neighbor has told that story at least.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. A million
100 times that, she's named after me.
Yeah, I knew who he was, but it didn't, like, resonate till I saw it spelled out on a mailbox. It just kind of... It was kind of like, you remember in Boogie Nights? And he goes, Dirk Diggler. I saw it in lights. Dirk Diggler. It was kind of like that kind of moment.
I love that you use Boogie Nights.
Hilarious. Yeah, anyway.
You need to go steal that mailbox just for your chocolate room or something.
Is he still living?
No, he passed a few years ago.
The name lives on.
The name lives on.
Oh, wow. Okay. And, like, has he seen you since you christened yourself Macy Gray?
No, I never ran into him after that. But, you know, he lived on my mom and dad's street, and then they moved. But they were never, like, friends or nothing, but, you know.
Oh, okay.
He was just a guy across the street, some old dude across the street.
So I believe you were born in Ohio?
Canton, Ohio.
Okay, I was going to say, what city was it and what type of town was it?
So Canton, Canton,
okay.
is most known for the Football Hall of Fame is in Canton.
That's a sport, Amir.
Football. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I get it. I get it. Okay.
Everybody
the sports,
got quiet.
I get
I'm
it.
Like, they know. Okay. So
artsy motherfuckers. That's what we.
I went to school with Marilyn Manson. He's from Canton.
Wow.
The OJs are from Canton. The DeBarges. LeBron's from Akron. Akron's like 20 minutes away. Mm-hmm. It's like the next little city over. And then a bunch of people. Steph Curry's from Akron. Trying to think who else.
Ohio
players.
I don't even know if it's quietly, but it's definitely the heartbeat of America. Like,
yeah.
So Steve, explain the sports to me. Why? why are all the Hall of Fames of sports in Ohio? I understand why the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is there, because allegedly Alan Freed, they claim he coined the term rock and roll, but I tend to think that he just stole it from whatever black person was saying. That's how he coined the term. So that's why I know the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is in Cleveland. But I mean, just in terms of Cooperstown or the Football Hall, like, why is...
Well, Cooperstown's in New York.
That's how much I don't know about the sports.
But I don't know the actual...
Yo, wait, Bill's face right now. Bill, I don't think I've ever embarrassed you more. You're pondering your future on this podcast based on that last question I just asked.
I mean, yeah. Cooperstown is very much in New York, but that's okay.
Ohio and upstate New York are similar places,
is my guess.
That's how much I don't do the sports.
We know. I went to a baseball game with you. Do you remember? We ate cheesesteaks. It was a big night for cheesesteaks.
Did the team lose when we went?
Oh man.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I'm known for that.
I never asked you how's come you don't like sports? Why don't you watch sports?
No, I it's not that I don't like sports. I just joke that, you know, you can't worship two gods. And
that's true.
For me, there's music people stick to music and sports people stick to sports. And then some people get really, really defensive when I say that. Well, I like sports and I do music. And then behind their backs, I'd be like, anyway, real musicians stick to me. So
you dedicated your life a little harder to music than most, Amir. So that's
not healthy to just love one thing only. You know, like, come on, experience a little bit more than that. But
hey, do you meditate 3 hours a day?
I played. No. I played wiffle ball when I was a kid. I played kickball. Played dodgeball.
Kickball.
None of those are real sports.
Kickball's a real sport.
To black people, kickball's a thing.
You're right.
I'm saying they're not professional sports.
Kickball and roller skating.
Yep, that's real.
You know, for real.
Yep.
I'm good at ping pong.
You're right.
Ping pong, domino.
Ping pong's in the Olympics.
Girl,
spades.
Tag, king ball.
Spades. Yeah. Spades is a real sport. Like Skelly. People get serious on spades. They get upset.
Have you guys? Are you guys keeping up with the? Now that they have the spades tournament on the poker channel.
Shut up.
Yeah, it's getting real now. Yeah, they're.
See?
What? We'll talk about that later. I want to know what time. Okay, if you know.
Yes, they're now starting spades tournaments on the.
It's going to up my game.
Yeah. Can you win money?
Yeah, they're playing professionally.
Yes,
yeah.
It's about respect on the name.
I played one spades game in my life. With Jill and Lizelle, and I did horrible, and that was it. That was my.
You don't play cards,
girl.
No.
He plays trivia. He
play like chess, checkers, anything, dominoes.
See, after watching Queen's Gambit, I was going to try. For 3 days, I was on fire about chess, and then I lost that fire. So, you know. I'll stick to Uno.
Uno's fun.
Yeah, but Staxi's like I played ghetto version. Not the.
Okay. You can. There are so many ways to cheat at Uno. There are so many ways.
Rabbit hole.
Okay, we're never going to talk about Macy's career.
Lord.
Sorry, I'm just saying. I get offended when white people won't allow the ghetto rules of Uno to stand. And even crazier, Uno once tried to clap back at me on Twitter because I told him like Staxies are allowed.
Yeah, doubles and triples all day, son.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they tried to, like, the Twitter account of Uno tried to correct me, and I had to send them.
And Black Twitter shut that shit down.
Yeah. Like, I can't. We took over that game. I'm sorry. Anyway, Mace, what was your first musical memory?
My dad whooping my ass because I wouldn't practice my piano. I was getting my ass beat every because I had to practice a half hour every day. And sometimes I would, like, wait till he fell asleep, and I'll think he was asleep. And then I would say, yeah, I practice it. And I would get a whooping if I didn't practice.
If you didn't practice your skills?
Yeah.
Man. So, how old were you when you first started playing piano?
7.
Was this like a church requirement thing or like just something to do to pass the time or?
No, it was my mom. My mom had this thing for signing me up for activities so she could go do what she was going to do. That was like my babysitter. So if I was at the YMCA all day, then. You know, I was covered. Just my mom. Or like after school, I went to piano and then she would drop me off and she would like go grocery shop. Like that was her, like, you know, those were all my babysitters. But I learned, you know, I learned how to play the piano. She had me in archery, swimming. I could do anything when I was little.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You guys didn't have the Y mom? Just dropping you off on Saturday.
Yeah, boys and girls.
I had summertime. Yeah.
Yeah. Basketball, gymnastics. Yeah.
Everything. I know. Yeah. I was in gymnastics. That was good.
Forward roll. Mm-hmm.
Bill, did you get dropped off at the Y on Saturday?
No, I got dropped off at Hebrew school on Sundays.
Yeah,
for sure.
Me too. Yeah.
Okay.
Hebrew school's our Y.
Same thing.
Really?
Yeah. We had that. We had a Jewish center, and I had to go to that too.
Well, how'd you have to go to that?
Because they had, what class did I take? That's why I took swimming.
A cleaner Y, a cleaner gym.
That's why I took swimming lessons.
You're right. That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
because it wasn't no swimming pool that was nice like that.
Yeah, I couldn't go to 52nd Street Y. I could go to the Jewish Y on Broad Street, but not the 52nd Street Y.
Exactly.
You get your ass beat at the 52nd Street Y. No, it's real. Exactly. Do you remember the first album that you purchased?
The Bought With My Own Money was Purple Rain. Huge Prince fan. And
Wait, was your first record?
First record I bought with my own money. I mean, you know, before that, I was just listening to my mom and dad's records all the time.
Oh my God, you were a teenager when that was out. Okay. So even before then, there wasn't a large record collection in the household?
No, my dad was a huge, all he did all day was play 8-tracks. But,
nice.
You know, I just listened to that. That's what I grew up on. My dad, my
what
mom.
What kind of stuff was your dad listen to?
He was a huge James Brown fan. He thought James Brown was just everything. And, you know, the Isley Brothers, and my mom was really into Gladys Knight and all that. You know, mostly soul music. And my mother was a huge fan of Elvis Presley. So I knew a lot of Elvis Presley songs, and I knew a lot of Frank Sinatra. She really liked those two. But other than that, it was all like that old soul stuff, you know. You know, grown people stuff.
Did you bring Purple Rain back to them? Like, did y'all listen to it together?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I got really into Prince when MTV came out. When was MTV?
81, 82, 83, 84.
So yeah,
when MTV was good, between 81 and 85.
Yeah, so that's when I got really into all different stuff. That's when I really got into rock and roll. I was like a big Poison fan. I liked all those Van Halen records. And I got really into Prince. I painted my room purple. And I saw the night I saw Purple Rain, I sat there for three showings. I sat there.
Three showings of it?
Yep, in a row.
What a time to be alive when you would have to sit and watch a movie over and over again, thinking that you would never see it again as long as you live.
I was obsessed with that movie.
Wow.
So that was like, you know, my big fanatic is Prince. I'm a Prince. I was a Prince fanatic,
So... I mentioned at the top of the show that the texture of your voice is probably the most, even when you talk, it's a melodic sounding voice. Did you always have this texture in your voice, even as a child? Like, was this always something that stood out from anyone else that was speaking?
Yeah, I always had an unusual voice, but you know, when you're little and the kids make fun of you, so I stopped talking. I mean, I didn't stop talking. It just made me really quiet, made me shy, and I didn't want to speak because all the kids would start laughing, you know. So I didn't talk much.
So outside of maturity, what's the difference in your voice than now? Like, was it just way different, or has it evolved into something? Had it evolved into something different?
Well, yeah, it grew up with me. I mean, it's changed for sure. And then probably a lot of singing, you know, because I took vocal lessons for a while. And then, you know, when you go on tour, that's like practicing. That's like a 2-hour vocal lesson every night. So, so it's definitely changed. But yeah, I've always had a, you know, funny voice, they call it.
Okay.
Beautiful.
What was the first? Do you remember the first concert you ever attended?
Okay, so my mom took me to see Michael Jackson when I was super little, but on my own, it was a Prince concert.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, damn. She took me to see, and I remember Michael Jackson running through the crowd, and everybody, all the little girls, jumped on him, and my mom grabbed his cheeks.
Really?
Oh, like the butt, the bottom?
On his face. On his face.
Oh.
But let me tell you how funny life is. So what was that last thing he did? It was like a big MTV. It was like MTV 10 or something.
Well, he did something for that, all of his album titles. Was it called Invincible?
I don't know. It was like an MTV.
You're talking about the movie he did, but that's, she's talking.
No, it was an MTV. Remember that MTV night thing. His bodyguards beat up that guy?
Oh God, that's my favorite moment. The dude from is he from Pulp?
When something like that.
At the world, okay, at the world, you know that award show where it's like the World Music Awards.
Yeah,
it feels so like staged. while he was performing Earth Song, I think Jarvis Cocker, is he in Pulp, I believe? He decided to run on stage and moon Michael's performance. You know, like Michael was doing that whole Jesus angelic floating out the sky shit or whatever, like save the earth, and then the guy was just like, this, you know, this is bullshit, and just ran on stage, and it became like a, what do you call those, like a Charlie Chaplin chase scenes, like a Keystone Cops,
yeah,
like yeah, it was like six people chasing Jarvis Cocker while Michael Jackson's trying to perform, do this majestic ending of a song, but all you could see was like the song that should have been playing in the background was sort of like those old timey 30s Flight of the Bumblebee, like just chasing him all, like they couldn't catch this guy for nothing. I don't know what happened, but
he got beat up really bad. But
oh, they fucked him up.
Yeah. So anyway, after it, Michael Jackson walking through. You're welcome. He's walking by. He has 50 bodyguards, and I took my mom, and she reaches in and grabs his cheeks, and he goes, "Hey." He goes, "Hey, Macy's mom," and then he walked away.
No, what? Yeah. No.
I'm just glad the bodyguards didn't beat up your mom.
That part.
You know how moms are. Like bodyguards don't mess with, you know.
So yeah. Grabbed his face.
Like moms, they just don't go there.
What Prince tour was your first concert? What tour was that?
Purple Rain.
Okay.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
That's yeah. cool.
And I knew the whole Prince. I like memorized the show. I knew all the moves.
What you wear? What you wear, man, to the show?
Oh, I know I did my hair. I had my, you know, like, you know, the mullet, you know. I know the I mullet. Tried to put my hair over one side. Yeah, I don't remember what mullet. I wore. But I was trying to get that hairstyle, like Wendy and Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What was the first Prince tour that you saw, Quest?
Okay, so.
Wait, this is a pretty simple question.
I know.
This is a two-word question. This is a damn tour.
The first two Prince shows, I had to
wrap it up.
I had to do some devious shit that I haven't yet to admit to my parents yet. So,
what? It's okay. You 50. What is the show?
Anyway.
Yeah. See you guys in 20 minutes.
Yeah, technically the Love Sexy show, but.
Really?
Yeah, I saw him in 93 somewhere in
Ooh,
London.
Ooh, how old were you? I'm telling Miss Jackie, how old was you?
Shut up, lying. Anyway, Mace.
Yeah.
What would you think your come to Jesus moment was as far as you wanting to sing, or like did you form a band in high school or any of those things? Like
So I went to USC, and I used to hang out with all the music majors. I was in a film school, and I just gravitated to the musicians because that's, you know, I knew how to play. And so, you know, in college, we would form bands and stuff like that. So I met this kid, right? He had a four track. I'm giving away my age again. He had a four track in his dorm room, and he used to write songs, and he was super cute, and he was like, I told him I wrote songs because I, you know, just so I could hang out with him, you know. I was trying to hit it. So anyway, I got attached to it. I started like writing songs, and I started, you know, I really liked, like, you know. And so, you know, when you write a song, you have to kind of sing it so the person knows how it goes.
Yeah. Oh, you were writing it for him?
Yeah, I was writing songs for his tracks.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, you know how, so we had all these little recordings of me having melody ideas on his songs. And then one of his friends had a every Sunday like little brunch gig down at the Ramada Inn down by USC downtown LA, and he needed a singer, and we would all get $100 every Sunday. And I had no intention of being a singer, but when he told me I would get $100, I was just like, yeah, I'll sing it. And so I started doing brunch every Sunday at the Ramada Inn. I couldn't, you know, I didn't know anything about singing. And then he gave me all these little records, you know, standards to learn. So I learned a bunch of jazz standards and stuff like that.
Okay.
And that, that was the beginning. And then I got into it. I liked it.
So not one person until that moment saw you as a lightning in a bottle moment, because like, again, the texture of your voice is like, that's a music producer's dream, to capture something that unusual and unique for singing. Like, it just, like, no one had heard your voice and was just like, Jesus Christ, like, we got to get you, at least in your teen years, up until you went to college. Not once did that moment ever occur.
Mm-mm. Quest, I was going to say, you look exactly like you did when I met you.
No.
Man, you look sad. He's got a team of people working on that.
I got a team working.
Oh, that gave me a headache. Oh, Steve.
Wait a minute. Mace, your family's last name is McIntyre?
My mom and dad, my last name is Hines. I was married.
Right.
I mean, I'm not married anymore, but I was married. I didn't change my name back. But my mom and dad are McIntyres, yeah.
Good Irish people.
And what, because my family is McIntyres. Are they from any of the Carolinas or?
Yeah, my dad's from the South,
Where?
Of Georgia, Florida. I don't know if they're from the Carolinas, but I know his family's in Tampa.
Okay.
Oh, Buccaneers, what? Do you know who won the Super Bowl, Quest?
Steve knows.
No, she asked you.
Yeah, she asked you.
Yeah, I know who won the Super Bowl. The weekend
also
won the
said
Super Bowl.
And then asked you. So it was like
Tom Brady won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, Tom Brady and the weekend won.
The weekend did not win the Super Bowl.
He did not. I don't think he
lost the Super Bowl.
No.
I didn't like the weekend at the Super Bowl. I thought it was cool. No?
I wasn't into it.
I thought I was tripping.
Really?
It was tripping.
I mean,
I don't think
some great memes out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. That's all. I think at this rate, if you can get a good meme out of something, like.
That's a win, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a win. It's like, what magical point, 7 seconds can you take from this moment? But, that jacket, I just found out that jacket he wore, that red rhinestone jacket, that cost $3 million.
What?
Yeah, that rhinestone, red rhinestone jacket, it's like hand-stitched. And
I know he gave that up to feed somebody. I know he did.
Why would that be $3 million?
He gave that. He did something with that money.
Made of rubies, not rhinestone.
Oh, my God.
Made of rubies.
It had to be made of. And
it
should
made
have
of rubies.
It should have cooked for him and exercised him every day.
Real.
And had his kids for him for $3 million.
Well, he wore it at every thing that he's promoted so far for this record.
Oh, but, that jacket. Okay.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
The red jacket.
Yeah, okay.
That's, it's a very expensive jacket.
What do you think of artists having to pay to do the Super Bowl?
That's I didn't know thing? That artists were paying to do the Super Bowl.
What? Wait a minute now. Breaking news now. What you saying now? What's going on now?
You have to pay to do halftime. Well, you pay for your own show, which is cost him about $5 million.
Well, yeah.
Wow.
I don't think he paid. I don't lie. I think you're responding to, did he pay to do it? No. They still have to come to you.
Like, no, I get that
Jay-Z
part.
Jay-Z organized that.
No, I get
so
that part.
Rock
it's an invitation.
They came to him.
No, I get that part. Yeah. I'm
but,
just,
you know, what you want to do to it depends on how deep your pockets
are. They don't have a budget for a show. What she just said was, there is no budget for the show. It's like, you can come. I will invite you to come, and then you can figure it out, right?
That's well, there's a limited budget, but if you want more, then that's coming out of your pocket. So, yes, in addition to those, $2 to $3 million just for that jacket, I think he paid an additional $7
million. What's the...
So it didn't used to be like that, though. It started with Katy Perry was the first one to pay to do halftime.
Wow.
What was that, like three years ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you got to make an impression. And if you sometimes it works for you. Like,
what's
I
the return
it worked for
on
J-Lo?
That? What's the return? That's what I was about to say. What's the return on
well,
that?
Well, I mean, it's a calculation.
No one bashes you.
I mean, if you know you're going to make $20 million that night from streaming your music or something like that, and you spend $10 million, all right,
Okay.
It's probably a scare of money don't make none. situation. Okay. So I think at the time maybe he agreed to do it kind of thinking that it was going to be a victory lap, but I don't think he was expecting to get shut out at the Grammys this year. So that kind of made it meh, that sort of thing. But you know,
he should have taken the weekend off.
There you go, Steve. This is where I would press.
That was great.
Words of wisdom from Sugar Steve.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonte Vilo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Mace, I know. Yeah. I know. Often, I can tell when critics are lazy when they start bringing up Billie Holiday. Because I actually think your voice is closer to Esther Phillips. Mm-hmm. Was she at all an influence on you? Like the range and the tone of your voice and the texture of it is more closer, in my opinion, to Esther Phillips than Billie Holiday. But you know, not many people know of Esther Phillips and her catalog like that. But like, is there a North Star for you? Like someone that vocally that you admired, not in a Prince, I'm a Prince fan way, but like,
yeah,
as far as your singing?
There was a lot, you know, I think when you're into music, you listen to a lot of different singers and, you know, you can learn so much. So Billie Holiday is what's so magical about her is you can understand every word she says, you know. Mm-hmm. She's not going to get Whitney Houston and belt out some crazy note, but, mm-hmm. So I learned from her to get my words in there, you know. And then so like from like I told you, I liked what's his name? David Lee Roth from Van Halen. And like I learned from him. I learned from him how
Diamond Day.
Yeah, but I can scream because of him. Also, so like, and then you listen to like hip hop, like Biggie, like you learn to sing on rhythm, like learn to hit the beat. You know what I mean? So there's all these lessons. And I'm still learning, you know. I'm trying to think. Chaka Khan, you know, or somebody like Prince is interesting because he did so many things with his voice. Like he could go, wow, yeah, big, you will, the picture. And then he could do the falsetto. So I learned from him to try, you know, experiment with my voice and hit high notes and stuff like that, you know.
Do you prefer singing in a lower range or a falsetto range?
No, as you know, there's a head voice, your chest voice. I've learned to not have to use my throat. So I got all kind of voices.
As a non-singer, I'm going to ask this question. Is that really important? Like, I know vocal trainers and whatnot are real big on, like, singing from your diaphragm. But why are most people that teach people to project, be it acting coaches or singers, why are they so insistent on singing from your diaphragm and not your throat?
Because it takes the work off of your throat, because your vocal cords will wear out a lot faster than your stomach, you know.
Yeah, it's preservation.
A proper singer can sing from, like I can sing from my cheeks. I can do all kind of stuff. But yeah, the idea is to use your throat as little as possible, because your vocal cords can wear a lot faster. There's a lot of canceled shows, stuff like that.
Ooh. Well, I was going to ask when you were actively touring, like how much damage would have to occur for you to cancel a show? Because even if you have a slightly hoarse or slightly scratched, it sort of goes into what your tone already is. But
no, I've only canceled two shows in my whole career because of my voice.
Okay.
One show I missed because of the weather, but, My voice, I got like, I call myself super vocals because I like, and when I canceled, it was all karma against Seal. It really wasn't my fault. Like, he was so off with me. And I think I messed my, that God just reached down and was like, you don't have to take this shit. And it took me.
Much love, beef alert.
Say, what's this?
Seal. Samuel Seal. Wow. Not Seal. Seal.
Yeah, a seal, the seal in the ocean. No, but he was, I opened for Seal for a couple of weeks and it didn't go well. And that was the only tour that my voice ever punked out of me.
Why didn't it go well?
He's just, you know, just we just didn't connect, you know, wasn't, you know, we weren't, you know, didn't go like that. But you know, when I opened for The Roots, that went great.
That was
my first tour, you guys, The Roots.
Wow.
Shout out to Dorn Beckman. When's the last time you rapped to Dorn or Steffi, formerly known of Star 69?
Yeah.
Dorn used to be in the Jazzy Fat Nasties before they went down to a duo. But Dorn's the one that put me onto you.
Oh, really?
And like, oh, no, man. Wait. She stalked. She stalked me. Like, I got to let you. Because the thing was, I was so over the top excited for when the Jazzies were on Tommy Boy as a foursome. Damn. When Jay Swift was producing them, it was like the next to Slum Village, that was like the demo I was the most excited about ever hearing. No offense, Fonte, I love you too.
I want to hear this demo.
Fonte, like, me too. Yeah,
so I think knowing the excitement I have for the Jazzies, she like hit, I remember her hitting me at like, it was past midnight. It might have been 1 a.m. And I was in L.A. I think it was like right after a House of Blues show. She's like, I'm driving over to play you this. And I sat in her car and listened. And like, I was like, who the hell is this? And yeah, like Dawn was like your biggest champion. So
I didn't
shout
know
out
that.
To Dawn Beckman.
We're still buddies.
I still send her my love. I haven't talked to, I don't know if she's on social media or anything. I haven't talked to Dawn in like 10 years, maybe 20. Oh, God. I'm in denial about what year we're living in.
I have to.
Yeah, I'll say like a few years back thinking I'm talking about like 2004, 2005, but no, that's a whole 20.
This is the year y'all are talking about? Is that when the tour was? 2004?
2004? Well, for her tour, it was 99.
2000.
2000, wow. Well,
the id came out in 2001, I'll say 99.
Yeah, you're right, because it was before I toured with you before my record broke.
Wow.
Yeah, she did. You remember that time, I don't know, maybe you were on tour with Dave Matthews. It was in Boston.
Yeah.
And you were drummerless.
I was thinking about that yesterday.
You called me on a whim and I tried to get up there, but it was like the weather was just hard. Did you do a drummerless show that night?
No. No, I forget what we did, but I thought about that yesterday. I was like, he was so cool. He was going to fly out and do my show. Because you were on tour too, right?
Yeah, I just never casually. I mean, that's the first time where it was just like, hey, I'll be right, like going out to get cigarettes. Like, hey, I'll be right back. I'm running to Boston real quick to play for Macy at the stadium. Then,
yeah, but see, that was like before I knew how everybody was and how the music business was. So I didn't think it was, I'm used to being on the streets in L.A. playing the Roxy. And I'm used to saying, hey, will you play drums for me tonight? So I didn't know like that was a big request, Because I tell people that.
Had it not rained.
They're like, you asked Quest to come fill in for you? I was like, but I didn't know.
That's the type of person I am. Like working.
Can we talk about lessons? Because Maze, you said that your first time going on tour was with The Roots. So like, of course we know they're ultimate showmen and whatnot. But so what were some of the lessons or things that you learned since that was your first experience?
Well, it was my first like real, run. And we watched The Roots every night. So my band was really fascinated with The Roots. And they wanted to have that kind of synergy. And I remember that. Oh, and then I remember partying a lot. Mm-hmm. We partied a lot because that was my first time and I just went crazy.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. And I remember, I remember drinking a lot and just having a really good time. I don't know if I was focused on learning, but my band was like, it actually taught us how to tour. Like that was my first tour and I learned how to go from city to city and get on stage every night. And you have to learn how to talk to your crowd. A lot of artists don't get that. You really have to have a conversation with, because if you just stand up there and sing and they're not engaged.
We hate that.
They don't really. So I remember really learning about being with different crowds, because you play in New York, it's a different crowd than when you go play in, I don't know, St. Louis, So I remember learning how to adjust. I remember that was my first time I ever had to do that.
If I recall correctly, I think, did you tell me that, not that Epic wasn't your first choice, but you had a record deal before you signed to Epic?
Yeah, I was on Atlantic like 3 years before my Epic deal. But that record never came out. Val, what was his name? No, Val didn't sign me. He was the president at the time, but the guy who signed me was Tom Carolan.
Okay, I was thinking it was, who's our guy? Social Justice.
Craig?
Not Craig Kelman.
Brad.
Flom.
Yeah, Flom. Jason Flom. I was thinking about Jason Flom. Okay.
No, I met Jason. I met with Jason. He turned me down. I met with him though.
What?
When he had Lava. Does he still have Lava?
He still has Lava.
Yeah, he called me in though. Jason was my first record label meeting ever.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He got my demo tape.
So what happened in the Atlantic situation that didn't work out that led you to Epic?
I got pregnant. And they didn't know, and my A&R came to the studio, and then I got dropped like right after.
Yo, remember when that was a thing?
They could, not they could do that, but I can't believe that.
For decades, like, remember in the 50s and 60s? Oh, God.
No, but even in the music world, like, why is life over once you... No, I'm saying, like, why would life be over in terms of the record label saying, well, she's pregnant now, so let's drop her.
Because men run labels?
There you go.
I mean, still, most artists have babies way later. Actresses, you know. A lot of girls don't want to mess their body up, though. It's not always.
And why do they not want to mess their body up when they can sing? Because why is that?
That's just crazy to me. That, I mean, was that their exact reason or did they make up an excuse? I assume they made up an excuse.
Yeah, like, they made up an excuse.
Oh, okay. That's what you meant. That's, I thought you meant they just told you, like, okay, well, you're pregnant, so this is over. Goodbye.
Yeah. When you, that's what they, I thought they, you meant. The label, they can't work you as much as they could. You know, that's the thinking. You know what I mean? Once you have a kid, it's like, oh, well, whatever we had planned for you, the touring and the studio and the running back and forth just all the time, you can't. That's no longer a possibility.
Yeah.
And but, it's fucked up.
But, sir, if you just had a kid, come on, let's go, because you know you ain't got to stay home.
Because you got to eat. Yeah, you got to make that money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So did you get, when you arrived at Epic, how much control were you given as far as the direction you wanted your project to go?
Not a lot. I mean, we had written the songs. Most of the songs on that first album, we were on my little demo tape that they heard. And then, but they hired this producer, Andy Slater.
Oh, Slater. Okay.
Yeah. So his concept, he wanted to do, because the demos were strictly like beats and you know, with, you know, bass program, you know. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to do, his concept was to do a R&B record with live instruments. And I had no idea what that was all about. But I was just, you know, I went with the flow. We had a lot of fights. There was a lot of fights, me and him, because I was used to things the way I wanted it. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted a tuba on one song, and he had a fit. But
really?
Yeah, he just, you know, I think he had a really clear vision, and I think he felt like he knew what he was doing. So it was very, you know, draining for me making that record. But once it was done, you know, I liked it. And then it grew on me. I really liked it, you know, much later.
I'm really dismayed that they didn't put a lot of muscle behind Do Something, because I always felt like out the gate. And again, I heard Do Something, her cover of Outkast is Get Up, Get Out, and Get Something. I instantly heard that and was like, oh, this is going to be an across the board hit. Like, this is a can't miss situation. Mm-hmm. And was it just that, I mean, they didn't know how to market it or properly work it or even get Outkast to do the remix or something like that? Like, I just felt like it was such an easy alley-oop shot that really didn't get maximized.
Yeah, that was an interesting time because someone, I don't know who put it all together, but they felt like it was really important for me to go to the urban audience first. They felt like if I skipped over and went straight to iTry, I wouldn't have that base or whatever. Right. Like I said, this is a time I knew nothing about the record business. So they did put out Do Something first, but it was kind of put out as a setup track for them to just get me out there. But they couldn't wait to get on iTry. So I don't know if they didn't give it the time it needed or it was just, you know, to kind of set me up and get me in all the papers and stuff. And then they went on the iTry, and then that was that, you know. I don't know. Like, I didn't know. Like I said, I didn't know what was going on. They were like, you know, show up on 42nd Street and I'll be there. I was just having fun, you know.
Yeah, well, I'll say I'd try. Well, now that it's two decades old, what is your relationship with the song? Is it a thing where it's like, okay, I dread having to still do this long into my career? Are you comfortable with still people coming up like, oh, that's my song, or, you know?
No, I love that song. I just hate that that's some people only know me for that song. I hate
just
that.
Just for that, yeah.
Yeah, I hate that. But no, you know what though, you guys? I still don't get it. I know it sounds stupid, but like I do my shows and people like still scream on that song. They still get up. They know every word, every ad lib, every beat. We still have to do it on the end. So right.
your last song.
Because I still don't get what all the fuss is about. I mean, it's a good song, but I still don't get like classic song from 20 years. I had no. I wouldn't have ever put money on that. No
my,
way.
My theory on I Try was, and this Rich, my manager Rich and I had this conversation, and we said, if I Try is probably the best song that Al Green could have maybe recorded or attempted to do in the aughts in 99 2000, if he were allowed to, like, it just it was a very, I don't know, it's like an authentic kind of, you know, it was dripped in sort of an authentic soul cloak that I think resonated with a lot of people, and you know, and it took off. Like, was it exhausting at some point? Because, you know, there was some point where, like, literally every commercial,
that record was everywhere. It ran VH1.
Allie McBeal.
That record was everywhere.
Any of those notebook type of romantic comedies, like, yeah. There was I Try.
Yeah. So,
like, in your head, like, what was, all right, so what was that rush like once you hit jackpot?
Oh, it's amazing. You know, you get to see the world and everybody's, you know, sweating you and giving you free stuff. And, you know, you say boo and they get all excited and, you know, and you make a lot of money and, you know, people look up to you. It's cool. I know people complain about fame, but I refuse.
Because
I enjoyed it. I mean, there's other stuff, you know, that was the first time I, like, you know, did mushrooms and, you know, stayed up for 3 days. I mean, a lot of stuff goes along with that. But, you know, I did a lot of shopping, things I couldn't buy before. I had a ball.
What's life like? I was going to ask you, we talk about fame. What's life like for you now? Is it still, you know, like crazy like that? Or are you able to go to Trader Joe's in peace, you know?
Oh, yeah. You know what I find is when you roll out alone, nobody really bothers you. But when the people take out 8 bodyguards and they say, oh.
Yeah.
You're drawing attention.
Yeah. Yeah, but when you roll out, especially now in a mask, even though it's crazy, people recognize me with a mask. I don't get that. So, but yeah, I go to the store all the time. And I mean, it's cool. It's not nearly as crazy as it used to be. But I still tour a lot. And I love touring. That's like my heaven.
How did you manage to maintain all of that and then still be mommy to 3 babes?
You know, I just lock them in the closet when I'm gone. And
mommy, dear. Wait, I'm afraid to ask this question. How old is Happy now?
23.
God damn, no.
Yes. Shit is real, man. Is that your oldest or your youngest?
That's my youngest. My oldest is 25.
Wow.
You remember Nisa and Mel, my son?
Yes.
He loved
it. In my mind, your kids are still 3.
Yeah. He came home and wanted a drum set after he
made
it. Wow. Wait, Happy's like past college now?
Yeah, she has one more year. She took some time off. She's a photography major and she got an internship and now she's going back to finish. And it's online. It's such a drag. I feel so bad for her. For students. Wow. I'm so glad I'm not in school.
But that's interesting.
They're old.
I'm sorry. That threw me for a loop, y'all. I wasn't ready for it. 23. I thought you were going to say like 15, 14. Like, oh, yeah, Happy's about to start high school.
Have they been around during this COVID time? Like, are you guys in vicinity, close vicinity to each other?
Yeah, at first, when it first started, my mother was here. My mother has cancer, so everybody was extra careful not to really do too much. But now, I don't know. It's hard to, you know, keep that up. It's been a year. It's hard to sit around the house again and, you know.
You got Generation Z babies. I know they're just like, I'm going out.
Yeah, I did tell them no company, you know. But now, you know, I come home sometime and it's a little, you know, straight people.
She coming, mama coming.
I know. Hide 20... in the closet. Get in the closet.
Okay. So, okay. Now, I have a question. My of your catalog, and I'm not being biased, like, The Id was always my favorite.
Thank you.
And, of course, I know about the... Do you subscribe to the 9/11 jinx of all those records? In case y'all don't know, like, there were at least 17 albums that were released between September 11th, 2001, and like the subsequent week, like September 17th, of which, you know, because of where the country was during that time period, you know, a lot of albums just fell by the wayside, kind of just landed, and with the exception of like The Blueprint, but you know, everyone, like Mariah's Glitter, like everything, movies, everything. Yeah. Did it disappoint you that, or, you know, did Epic not at least try to like do a re-release or just, you know, in time? Like, why did they just let, I thought that album was so brilliant, and you know, it's due to unfortunate timing, but like, what were your feelings of it at the time? And also, why wasn't, I'm so mad you made Shed a hidden track and not.
That was the tuba track.
Dude.
That's the one that get, that's the tuba track I was telling you about. I had a
Shed big old is my all time. I still play Shed in my DJ sets now. Like,
oh, thank you.
Shed's my shit, but it was a hidden track. Yeah. So like, why? Why didn't they at least try to revive it, or did they just say, like, look, just go back in the studio and start the what was the next one? The Trouble with Being Myself, like, to start on that. But what was the situation at the time?
I think the label was disappointed. I, like I said, I was still chilling, you know, and but people forget I sell most of my records overseas, and I sold 4 million copies of that record in Europe and the UK. So I didn't, but I know here there was kind of a, you know, what do you call it? Not a letdown, but a whatever. You know, because they hyped it up. There you go. They hyped it up and it didn't do as well as they wanted it to. But it did well.
I think if it weren't for 9/11, it would have been a different story. But
yeah, 9/11.
There's something I always now COVID, I get to ask you
COVID
this.
COVID messed up a lot of records.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. It just hit me. What? This is what I always wanted to know. Okay. So when you were promoting, when you were promoting The Id, there was an interview in Vibe magazine. Do you guys remember this at all?
Give me more. I'm waiting for
this.
Yeah, there was
like that.
No, but it was.
But I, you know, y'all read Vibe, so I'm like.
But I feel because it wasn't social media. You know, even though it was 2001 and we were like definitely living in social media esque times, but I just remember how people responded. I think Margo Watson, who
I cannot believe you remember that. That is insane.
Dude, you know what my obsession is? I remember every attempted takedown article of any black artist that I ever, you know, loved or that sort of thing. So
is that Margo with an AUX, right? MARGEAUX. Margo.
Yeah.
Was that
I know her. I think she's a music executive now, but back when she was a journalist, I mean, she did a Q&A with Macy and Vibe, and I think that people were just like thrown off by the interview. And
but that she screwed me because she wasn't a Q&A. She came over to my house. We hung out for 2 days.
Right.
I thought she was like my best friend by the time it was over.
Yeah, Margo's good peeps, or so I thought.
So I'm telling her, like I just told y'all, you know, I went over there, I did mushrooms, and I kissed somebody. You know what I mean? I'm talking to her like she's my girl,
right.
Even though she wasn't. That could have been my mistake. And then she puts it all in the article, and I didn't know that she would do that. So that's just something I learned the hard way. But you know, you just can't be telling people stuff like that. But
I
gave her a proper interview. But she took all the stuff I told her
off the record.
Yeah, off the record. Yeah.
I see.
Like she'd say, so have you ever blah, blah, blah? And I said, girl, you know.
Right. Yeah,
she put it in the article.
It would have been like her talking just to you, Laia. Mm-hmm. So
it but could I will
been,
tell you
it
this.
Could have been sister girl bonding, but instead it, you know.
But in her defense, she sent me the actual article that she wrote because I called her right away. And her whoever the editor was at the time totally just picked out those parts.
Oh.
Because the article she wrote wasn't that bad. Like the things that were, you know, not so.
Right.
Okay.
You know.
All right.
So godly. She
I know the editor too, and I got beef with her too, but I'll be nice.
So. Yeah, she totally. I don't know why she came after me like that, but it wasn't all Margot. Her article, I wish I still had it. I think I do. But her article wasn't that bad. Like if her article had been published, it wouldn't have been that bad.
Right. I see now. Okay.
But it was like
paragraph. I always wanted to know like what.
Yeah. Because
I knew like people were thrown off, and then like you didn't hear anything about it. But I always wanted to know what you felt. About.
Yeah, so I begged my label to let me speak on it, and they thought if I said anything, I would bring attention to it. But I was like, everybody read it already. I don't know.
Oh, more attention. You to know. It.
Would y'all, just random question now that you said that, I'm like, would y'all trade coming out then to now in a social media era?
No.
Okay, because I mean, if it was social media, you could have just said what you needed to say, right? But I'm
yeah, no, you know. Not can't. No, but let me say, because back in the day, we made a lot more money. We had a lot more fun.
Okay.
These guys are sitting here all day worried about their posts. Like, we True. Was out partying, you know.
True.
Word. Having fun, selling records, you know.
But I don't think that there was anything that scandalous in the article. So I think in this particular case, if Twitter were a thing in 2001, it probably, you know, probably could have been cleared instantly, whereas like because there was no explanation of it and just it was left out there in the, you know, kind of there in the atmosphere, that it just caused a lot of confusion at the time.
Yeah, but, it was that really hurt me. That was I was down about that for a long time. Took me a while to get over that. Yeah,
I see.
Because you know, it's not always just you. It's like when your mom reads it, you know,
right.
And your family, and they're looking at you sideways, like, girl.
You are
also during this time period, you were, you know, getting your acting chops on,
mm-hmm.
especially with like I think you did Idlewild, Lackawanna Blues, you did Spider-Man. Training. Oh, you did Training. Oh,
yeah. Damn,
especially Training Day.
And, yeah.
What was Training Day like?
It was wild because, okay, so I'm in the studio, and my manager said Antoine Fuqua wants to stop by and meet you.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really know who he was, and I was like, okay, whatever. And then he goes, you know, I want you to be in my movie. So I thought, you know, something was wrong with him because I don't have any acting background. I had no interest in acting. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, you know, so he hung out at the studio. And then he said, let's go to dinner tomorrow. So we went to Mr. Chow's. And he's sitting there and he's telling me all about his movie. And then he says, you know, yeah, and the guy that's playing this character is Denzel Washington. Mm. So I was like, what? You know. So then I got all into it, you know. Then I was calling my manager. I was like, yeah, I want to do that movie. And then, you know, I got serious about it eventually. But... At first I was just, you know, just putting my heart out because I had no skill or background in acting. So that was all heart, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But, it's shining through. I really enjoyed watching you as an actress. Yeah, and yeah. I always wondered if you had plans to do more because you really pop on screen.
Thank you. But he's cool. I went to his trailer and he gave me some advice, and he was very, I forget the name of his character. What was his character's name?
Scary. No.
Not Lonzo.
It was Lonzo.
Oh my okay. God. Yeah.
Fucking Lonzo.
Fonte is the most memorized. Like, Fonte is a walking IMDb for every actor, Lonzo. For every character.
But he was very much in character. He was like, it was like in his eyes. It was kind of scary.
What was his advice?
He said, just if you don't know what to do, just just be you doing your part.
That's what he does. That's hilarious.
So wait, he had to stay in character that whole time to not break it, or?
Yeah, he was in the trailer. Like, he had this look in his eyes I'll never forget.
Wow.
Like, I thought, like, he, and he was watching a Ken Burns documentary on, was it on Thelonious Monk?
Okay.
And I think he felt like that's
where Steve at.
Where, I think that's what his character would watch. But he had the whole set and he was just watching documentary after documentary in his trailer.
Which, now, what,
Steve,
what's
and my relationship is based on Thelonious Monk's Ken Burns Thelonious Monk documentary, by the way.
Yeah, that's wild, because that's what he was watching.
Training Day was project number what for you?
That was my first movie.
That was your
first. Yeah, so first.
Then
so,
I did Lackawanna. Uh-huh.
Can I ask you about filming in Philly and doing Shadow Boxer and their role and working with Lee Daniels?
Yeah.
That role that you played, even in Dying. Just can you talk about that and how that came about and what was it like doing working in film?
Yeah, well, it was the same. Lee came to see me, and that, you know, that was Lee's first directing.
Mm-hmm.
He had produced Monsters Ball, but that was his first directing. And
was that the one he worked on with Damon Dash?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Damon gave him the money. Yeah, and so. Lee is funny.
Yeah, I seen the clip.
I went to a party with Lee, and Lee is like, he'll just walk up to people and say, "I'm making a movie." This was way back when he was starting out. "I'm trying to make this movie. You got any money?" Like, seriously, like
Philly all day. Like,
yeah, just
the
like
original Kickstarter.
Like, yeah, door awesome. To door. Like, excuse me. Like, he wouldn't care, and I've never seen that before. No fear.
Yeah.
And he raised the money. But no,
that is very much a Lee Daniels thing.
Yes. That's my favorite Macy role.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I just.
Yeah, so we hit it off, and then I did the movie. Yeah. He's cool.
But you didn't answer. Infante asked, are you planning on jumping back into a little bit of acting? I know you got an album you're working on and whatnot, but what about the acting?
Yeah, my record's coming out, and then I'm doing a movie in October, and then I got a horror flick coming out in April. I did my first horror movie.
Ooh,
really?
Who?
Yes.
With who?
This new girl, her name is Jess Farley. Jess Farley. She's only 26. It's her first movie.
Oh, she probably got a sick mind.
It's actually pretty good. It's shot really, really good.
All right, y'all, you know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at Airbnb.com/host.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Mace, I totally forgot. One of my all-time favorite moments with you in any medium.
Mm-hmm.
You got to tell me. I don't even know if you remember this, or I don't even know if you know what how viral this moment was. But do you have any memories whatsoever of the New Year's Eve night of 2013? That whole Jamie Kennedy thing with Bone Thugs and Harmony and you and whoever else was on that show. Have you guys ever seen this clip at all?
It's a hell of a setup if you don't remember what it is.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I feel like you'd be like, and there were midgets. And like,
no, you guys don't. This, you know, again, was this 2000? I think it was 2011, 2012, whatever it was. If the only way I can describe it is if the white version of Funky Finger Productions from A Living Color, mm-hmm. if they were allowed to throw Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve special, but kind of with the finesse of like Wayne's World, like public access. So it's one of the things where like, you know, the host doesn't know the camera's on him and mm-hmm. they'll be like, well, I told the bitch to give me some fried chicken. Huh? Oh, hey, ladies and gentlemen, how you doing? Like, there's a lot of that. A fist fight breaks out on stage over two drunk girls. Busy Bone was in rare Busy Bone moment. And if...
Oh, you don't even know my band got robbed.
Wait,
that what? Night?
Yeah, that's not even...
yeah, I was going to say, it. Just Google... Jamie Kennedy New Year's Eve special, Los Angeles.
And what I'm doing right now.
It's one of the greatest. I think the version that's on the internet now is sort of a condensed, like maybe 6-minute version, but the entire production is, and like Macy counts down to midnight and it's still like maybe like 11:04. She's like, wow. Where's the start of the countdown? She's like, 3, 2, 1. And the producers are like, no, Macy's not even midnight. He's like, well, so just act like it's New Year's. Happy New Year. And then, you know, like it was so horrible that I knew it was like MacArthur genius levels of just excellence. That's how bad it was. It was the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah.
But...
It's called a fail on a couple of the videos. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's bad.
You gotta watch it. I mean, I think I discovered after seeing if there were any more Busy Bone moments that need to be witnessed besides his, I'm saying this lightly, his drunken rant. But
backstage,
it wasn't alcohol.
Crazy. And they had us in the same dressing room. Well, there was like a big room, but the room, and there was like a little divider between us.
That ain't enough.
So you weren't aware that this was like a highly viral moment for the internet?
No, first of all, we were super drunk. Everybody was drunk. But I didn't know. I've been drunk on New Year's Eve and done shows great. So I didn't know it was going to go.
It wasn't the drunk part. Yes, there was a lot of drunk parts, but it was just like the production was horrible. Everything it was horrible. Janky. You know, the jokes weren't landing. The host didn't know where he had to be. Like,
it was horrible. It was horrible. I can't believe you remember that.
It's my favorite thing to watch. Like, I'll say three times a year I'll watch that shit.
That is hilarious.
Do you have memories of doing the Fail Out project with us?
I do. I tell everybody about that. That was another time, and you just called me up and you're like, hey, come down, and you know. You know, nowadays when people say that, you got to call your manager and your assistant has to. But it was just like, okay. And I came down and we did it. And that's the night I met D'Angelo. And I consider
that the last night of Voodoo. Like,
yeah,
that was the closed chapter of it.
You met, oh, Nick Acosta.
But he was really impressed. Like, he knew of you, but you know, I think after the session, when you and him did the vocal session together.
Yeah.
He hit me up like, yo, man. Yo, I really fucks with her, man. I didn't know.
He called me the next day.
I know that. Like, he was really, I think he was like kicking himself that he didn't at least jump on the bandwagon before, or what, you know, like 2 years earlier. Cause I mean, this was 2000 now, but yeah. Like, he was really kicking himself that he didn't pay attention in 98 when he should have been paying attention. Like, he didn't realize, like, yo, like, she has chops. Like, I fucks with it like that. But
yeah. Yeah, but then I never heard from him again. He was like, yeah, let's do something. And I never heard nothing.
Yeah, well, you know, his next album came out 15 years later, so.
I'm not laughing at that.
That's man. True. I never thought about that.
Can you talk about working with, why did you choose Dallas Austin when you did the Trouble with Being Myself album? Like, what, how was your working relationship with him in the studio?
So that was different. That was the first time Polly Anthony, she was the head of the label, and she had me. I know.
Where's Polly at, man?
Polly passed. Wait,
Polly Anthony died?
Yeah, a while ago.
I didn't know that. Shit. Oh, damn. I didn't know that. Fuck.
Yeah.
Damn, I'm sorry to hear that.
I know.
No, Polly was the last of a, I won't say the Mohicans, but definitely the last of a breed. Damn. So she paired you two up?
She had me like meet producers. Like, because my first two albums, I just decided who I wanted. And, well, Andy kind of came in, but it wasn't a choice. She just said, Andy's going to produce your record. So then I was like, okay. So, but this is the first time I like sat with producers and they played me stuff. And
so you did not want to work with Anthony on this thing. Record?
With Andy? No.
No, you didn't want to work with Andy.
No. I mean, he's a great producer. We just fought. It's too much like fire. Like, we fought all the time. So I met with Dallas, and Dallas was like, he just kept talking about how much he loved, you know, the songs that I had and blah, blah, blah. He just kind of juiced me up, and I fell for it. I was like, okay, that was it.
Was it not a pleasant experience, or were you not pleased with the outcome of those songs that y'all did together?
No, we have fun. He's hard to it's hard to get him to sit. You know, he's very
in one setting.
We were much younger at the time, so we both just had a lot going on, and so it was cool. We got it done, but. I think he got upset with me because some of his ideas I didn't like. And, you know, there's always a first. So that was like the first time I had been in with somebody like him. And I didn't, you know, like now I would handle it totally differently.
Right. I also think with Single Choices, man, like for that album, like Come Together, I felt would have been the song.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Oh, my God. The fact that you know that song is so hard.
Macy, I'm an actual fan of yours. Like, I'm not just like, oh yeah, I know her and she sings as I try. Like, I know your entire discography. Trust me, I know your stuff. Well, then, okay. So, first of all, shortly before she passed. Well, I mean, she passed in 2016. But what was it like working with Natalie Cole? I know that she was on. You used her on the Big album. What was it like? But even more than that, I got to know, what's it like working with Ron Fair? Like, in my mind, and I hope I don't get, you know, you don't ever want to rock the boat of Ron Fair or Jimmy Iovine when you talk about them. But, you know, Ron always, when I think of, like, when they talk about, like, a suit, you know, like when there's a suit in the room and people are like trying to be creative, like that's Ron. And Ron, like he infamously told Will.i.am, this is when Will was pondering whether or not to put Fergie in the group or not. And Ron says, well, you know, look, I know you guys have your fantasies of being like the Roots, but, you know, you could either be like the Roots or you can win and sell some units. What do you want to do? And wow. That was, I'm not offended because that's how Ron's just cut and dry. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
He always gives you his unsolicited opinion. Like, if you guys just had a girl in the group and, you know, you guys would win too. And I'm trying to tell him, like, you know, just winning isn't just like, that's not my life goal, just to win, that sort of thing. But what was it like working with him on this album?
He's very, you know, precise and, you know, everything is really big orchestral and thought out and stuff like that. And, you know, he's Ron Fair. He was always really nice to me. I hear a lot of horror stories, but he was always really nice to me.
I see.
So I don't know. It was cool. But, you know, Will did that.
Yeah, Will, well, I know it was on his label. I don't know how much he produced it. There's one joint on there that
I
loved.
He did most of it.
There's one joint on there I loved called Okay. And I always wanted to know if the Neptunes had anything to do with that or.
Justin Timberlake wrote that song.
There you go. Okay.
Justin and Will.
I felt there was like at least a one degree to Pharrell in there somewhere. Like the way the bridge sounded and all that. I was like, yo, this. But, you know, because we were past the CD era, I never once looked up the credits and whatnot. So,
Macy, I wanted to always ask you about the song Love Won't Wait off the Black Eyed Peas first album. That was my favorite song on that album, and I loved your performance on it. Do you have any memories of doing that song?
No. Nope.
Or the session for it? It's always like that.
Honest.
Sorry. I don't.
In your mind, do you have memories, like the favorite collaboration moments, though? Because you've done so many. I mean, even Amir asking about Natalie Cole, I forgot all about that. But are there some memorable ones in your head that stick out the most?
Stick out the most? Probably. I did a record with Robin Thicke, and then he left to go out to dinner, and he never came back.
Wow. Speaking of D'Angelo.
He tried to do a duet and he never finished the record.
And y'all never spoke after that ever.
I mean, I run into him, but no.
Okay. But
and it was a Ron Fair record we were supposed to do, and he just came back.
Oh,
he made a record.
That's not okay. you gave Hit Boy one of his first looks. Like, how did you choose him? Especially before, you know, his blow up with Niggas in Paris and all the other stuff that he did.
Yeah. He was at the record plant. I was at the record plant, and he was with, I forget, but he came in my room and he just said, hey, you know, I'm a producer and, you know, blah, blah. And then I called him to see what he had, and we worked together. You know, he was just hustling.
Oh, wow.
But I keep my eye out for, like, I listen to everything. Like, people come up to me, and because you just never know, you know what I mean? So when people want to play me stuff, I sit there and listen.
Ooh, you just said that out loud. You really mean it. Because you know, she just said that out loud. So, I mean, if it wasn't happening before, now people listening, like, okay, cool. I feel comfortable just handing
it. That's how I met Pharrell, actually. I did a record with Pharrell. He was 19, and nobody knew who he was. Not really. He did. It was me and Guru. It's a record called.
Oh, that's right. It was on the Jasmine tag. It was all I said. It was all I said.
Yeah.
All I said.
Yeah. I forgot.
All I said.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's Jasmine tag.
Yeah.
Is that Jasmine tag one?
The Street Soul one.
It was three. It was the Street Soul one. It was the one with Certified.
Certified.
On.
I was just about to say. I forgot
you were on that record.
Yeah.
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 Wow. And they were like, there's this new kid and Pharrell. And, I mean, you know, and I went to the studio and it came out cool. He was out, but not like, he wasn't Pharrell yet. Pharrell.
Yeah, just, he still had the mustache.
Yeah, he didn't have a mustache.
Yeah, he still had the mustache. I always wanted to know this, and I never heard this before, but what was the idea of covering the entire Talking Book album by Stevie Wonder? Whose idea was that?
That was okay. You know Hal Wilner? He's the to be the MD. I don't know. Yeah,
that's my guy. Me and Steve.
Me too. I love him. So he had this idea. He was like, nobody's ever covered a whole album, and then he had some ideas. And one, and Talking Book is like the one album I know backwards and forwards. I know every word, every beat.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that when I was on this little label, and I could do whatever I want. So we just went in the studio, did it.
Okay.
It was fun.
But then you followed
it up. It was house style, though. Everybody's plugged in. And
but then you followed it up with another cover album. Like, what was the logic behind that? Well, just covered was at least half covered. Was covered all covered songs or just?
No, it was all covers.
Okay. Some that were obvious hit singles and some that were like cool album cuts. And
yeah, I was on this little label and my manager didn't think I should like give him any big records or something. I mean, that I probably shouldn't have announced that, but.
Well, I thought the whole goal was to shoot your shot, like no matter what.
Yeah, no, not the. So in some cases, you should shoot your shot. Not always. But they were this little label, and my manager didn't think they were capable of, like, you know, properly promoting a song. And so he was like, you should just do covers and then let's get up out of there. And so we'll just do covers. But some of my favorite songs of mine are on that record. I know I shouldn't have said that.
No, it's just honesty.
I take it back. You guys, give me another excuse.
We still got some good songs. It don't really matter. It's like good. Let me download this covered. I didn't even know about this. Fuck it.
No, covered is that has some good records on it.
Of your canon, what's your favorite album?
Probably definitely my first one, The Id. And then my last one, I did an album called Ruby. Ruby that I think is really great.
Yeah, I need to go back and listen to Ruby.
Yeah, Ruby's a good album.
Some would call that a return to form. Is there anyone that you have yet to work with that you would like to?
I actually got this song on my new album I want you to play on. I was going to send it to you.
Send it to me. Steve, okay. Give her your email so I can drum one.
Is that the one that I think Susie sent us the Spotify link for that drum?
Well, it's really actually like a breakdown in the song, and you kind of just do some solo shit.
Okay.
Right, Macy? It's out, the song you're talking about?
No, not the song for Quest, but there's a song. Okay, so everybody listen, stream a song called Thinking of You.
Right.
And then there's a song out called Dear America. Those were, because we're setting up my album.
Because is this the first time you're doing it? Correct me if I'm wrong, a jazz record?
No, I've done a jazz record. This is my first, I've been with my touring band for about 5 years, so we decided to be official. So it's called Macy Gray and the California Jet Club.
I'm scared to ask where that name band.
Go ahead and ask her.
Where did that name come from, Macy?
It's really boring. So we all live in California. We fly a lot. It's a club. I don't know. I didn't come up with it. I would have came up with something way better. No, it's cool. But so, Thinking of You, if you go on Spotify, you look up Macy Gray and the California Jet Club. You guys would love Dear America. That's my favorite. But it's a good record.
Okay. You know what? I did have one question about whose idea was it to do the stripped album the way you did it? Steve, what's the technical term I'm looking for? Do you remember?
Binaural.
Yeah.
How did you know before I even asked? Because, never mind, forget it. This is why we're Questlove Supreme. But yeah, what was the what was the decision to make it binaural? Which I assume that it was basically two strategically placed microphones in the room.
One.
Oh, just one microphone.
One, yeah.
So the Cowboy Junkies first did this idea, correct? I believe. Where they infamously went to this church to record this album. But yeah, you place one microphone perfectly in the center of the room. And I guess each musician has to fall in proximity to that microphone so that the balance is perfect and you all play at the same time.
We did it at a church in Brooklyn.
Okay. It's like an audio version of Dogma 95. Like it's a challenging sound to achieve. But was that your idea or just your producer at the time? Or
no, there's a Chesky Records. Do you know Norman Chesky?
No. I don't.
He owns a jazz label called Chesky Records, and he does most of the albums on his label like that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because there's no mix, of course, and you get it all done in 2 days. You go rehearse, and then you go and you cut it. But it's back in the day. I mean, most of the old records cut like that.
We're done like that. Yeah.
But I love the way it sounds, and I love the way that record sounds. But yeah, we all got in kind of a, what do you call it, like a U shape around the mic, mm-hmm. and we cut half of it one day, and the next day we cut the other half.
Oh, that's what's up.
I'm sitting there thinking I'm gonna go back and do my vocals over, so because I wasn't like it just didn't hit me like you. This is it.
Oh, so, you didn't know it was final.
It's really final. That's the only thing.
That's crazy.
That would be cool for the Roots, though. You guys would kill that. Oh, my God.
Something y'all haven't done, huh?
I would love to, but I don't know if sonically we can achieve that. But, you know, I mean.
No, there's people that know how to do that would hook it up for you.
Steve, let's go to church.
Like a real engineer would know how to do that.
You knew that was coming. Engineer. Mace, before I wrap up.
Yes.
We got to talk about my good.
Yeah, the charity.
Yeah.
Can I get that question out? Okay.
Sorry.
We beat you to the spot.
Right.
Thanks, Steve.
That's a sports term.
Oh, the spot?
To the spot, yeah.
Beat us to the spot. Thank you.
I have a question. What is that on your shoulder? That's driving me crazy. What is that?
Who, me?
It's a bagel. Like
a, oh, or him. Oh, I was like, oh.
Why is that bagel on Steve's shoulder?
That is it. Oh, wow. Look at
Dee and Ricky, they make those Lego hearts for me. Now they're making donuts.
This their new line?
But did the jacket come like that, or you put that on there?
No, I just put it on the jacket because this is green and the jacket's green, so, you know.
I keep forgetting to go to their Instagram page.
Okay.
Every time.
Yeah, Dee and Ricky.
I thought it was a bagel for a minute.
I thought it was, too.
No, it's a donut.
They dope brothers, though.
Yeah.
I'm glad Amir Rockstad's dope.
They make awesome brooches.
You should rock the bagel one, Bill.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Actually, they just hit me 3 weeks ago. They're sending me a lox and bagel. They actually paired up with some high-end Brooklyn deli to do lox and bagel, so they're going to send me one. So I'll rock it for you.
Yeah. Am I allowed to rock it for y'all? I'll
represent.
Oh, that's dirty.
or I'll ask you permission if I can rock it. But what I was asking you, Mace, was about mygood.org. Could you explain sort of the process of you starting this foundation?
So My Good is what we do is we support the families who've lost loved ones due to police violence. Mm-hmm. So we come in and help with funeral costs, a lot of medical bills, mental health services. A lot of families, you know, they get so down and depressed, they lose everything. So we've had to get a couple of moms housing. It's I think, you know, people get all into their opinion of it and you forget that someone's actually living the death, someone's death, you know, lost a kid, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so that's what we do. It just started in July and I'm really proud of it. You know, we want to make a difference. We want to help change laws and stuff like that, but it's mostly financial support because of what the families go through after, especially, you know, you hear about all the court cases. I mean, that's
lawyer fees,
lawyers and all kinds of, I mean, you have no idea what they go through. A lot of, you know, moms and dads break up after there's been suicides, a lot of, families fall into like addiction and stuff like that. So we're just there to help people get back on their feet. And help them get through it.
And people can go to, it's mygood.org, mygood.org.
Yeah, you go there, you donate, or you can go on the email if you want to be a part of it and just support and stuff like that. But we're doing good. I mean, it's new, so it's just coming together, but we're doing good. We're going to make a documentary, and we have our own shoe coming out.
Your own shoe?
Yeah, we're going to sell shoes to help raise money for the foundation. They're pretty dope.
That. Yeah, nobody sells shoes. Yo, yeah. Are they like sneakers? Are they like little slip-ins?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The website is dope. Okay. All right, amazing. Okay.
I wanted to ask you, I saw the interview you did on Oprah.
And oh God!
I wanted to, no. Mm-hmm. It was amazing to see that. But what I want to know is in sort of in the pandemic, how have you been handling staying clear and staying focused and kind of sober, I guess you could say. How have you been handling it?
I haven't. I'm fucked up right now. I'm just kidding. Okay, so let me see. Wait.
That's our sign by for the show. Where is it?
Go. No, but my mother was here. That kept me in line. I mean, not that I don't have I got away from that. So I'm proper healthy and
right.
A lot more mature now. But my mother made us all be good while she was here. That's for sure. And then I started working on my record. So I was always in the studio. And then, you know, like I binge watched like everybody else. And I learned how to cook and all that bullshit. But it wasn't that.
Learned how to cook or learned other things to cook?
I can cook better, put it that way. I got all into my spices and my seasoning stuff I had never really worried about before.
Seasonings and spices.
Yeah, you know, before you just make a hamburger, you flip it a couple of times and put some barbecue sauce. Now I'm all into, you know, lemon pepper and put a little of this. Because there wasn't nothing else to do. Yeah, the rubs, all that stuff. I didn't even know what a rub was before.
Yo, I'll admit to you, like, I've been paying a lot of attention to the spice cabinet way more than I normally have, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Cinnamon and lemon pepper to reach for, but.
Oh, yeah, we fancy now. I bought some black garlic the other day. Let's go.
Damn. Okay. Yeah. Truffle salt. I'm still in my truffle phase. Truffle everything.
Truffle oil, garlic oil, all the oils, all the infused
truffle
oils.
Truffle everything.
Oh, yeah, yes. Because there was nowhere else to go but the grocery store. So everybody got into, like, you know,
right.
Let's get some black garlic.
Ain't used it yet, but you know it's there.
Let me see what this is. There's some rub over there.
Wow.
I started like, you know how they have the self-checkout? You know, yes. Before I was way too bougie for that. Like, I'm not checking out my own groceries. Are you kidding me? Now I just go to self-checkout just for something to do. I'm sitting there for like an hour just bagging my little groceries. Like, this is like the highlight of my day. It's horrible.
Hey, self-checkout question, y'all. Ain't nobody ever just, you know, not put it across the bar? Like,
yo. Wait, okay, let me ask.
No,
Steve,
you just put it in the bag.
Crimes.
I was just,
great.
Nah, I mean, y'all ain't never
no.
Really Fonte?
Yeah.
Steve, look me in the eye right now.
I'm past that point in my life.
I would just.
Steve.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm looking. Yeah,
Steve,
I'm,
look me in the eye right now.
Uh-huh. He'll know if you're not.
Fourth floor, how honest are you?
No way.
Fourth floor?
Steve walks out with like four chicken farms.
Floor at 30 Rock?
No, I know. I know what you're talking about. They got vending machines there with food in them, but I've never.
No, it's a level of trust on the fourth floor at 30 Rock that I've never seen.
Oh, like,
it's,
like, it's
so easy that I purposely like
don't tell
pay
me this
more just to not
just to offset the niggas are stealing.
Yes, because
oh no,
on the fourth floor there's just a complete like. Grocery store that's just isolated. Like if I wanted to, I could just grab like 16 yogurts if I wanted to or whatever. And
a lot to carry.
And I'm like, wait, they trust us to do this? Like I could literally just walk out here with an entire refrigerator of
how do you pay for it? Aren't you supposed to pay for it?
No, you pay. They trust that you will be honest and pay for it, which
same thing with self-checkout.
Oh. I know they're not watching.
Oh, I see. Wow.
But I just wanted to know if you ever had the temptation to just like, give me it, you know, and
Target is not, expensive. Every once and again, I reparations.
Well, I believe in karma, so that's why I've not done it.
Nah, same here. Yeah.
Karma, y'all get on my nerves.
Dude, it's real.
All right, you're right.
It's real. It comes back.
I'll take those earrings back.
Oh, anyway, wow.
Macy.
Earrings. Man. Oh, God. Oh, I was gonna say before you wrap, Amir. Basically, there's a connection I have. Well, you have with two bandmates of mine. I sing in a band called The Foreign Exchange, and one of my bandmates that I sing with, Carmen Rogers, she did a. This was back in 2001. She was working for a high-end, like this high-end design firm in Dallas or whatever. And they had like a Christmas party or whatever. And her boss thought it would be a cool idea for her to imitate Macy Gray. Because she still does like a really good Macy Gray impersonation.
See? Really?
Yeah. And so her boss was like, okay, I think this would be cool. You know what I'm saying? Do it. So at the time, Carmen had a big red fro. And she went and they go into the party or whatever. And they really thought it was her. So people start crying and hyperventilating shit. And they eventually had to rush her out the fucking building because they really thought it was you. So she just wanted me to just tell you that and tell you hello. And also, my very dear friend, Cy Smith, who toured with you. She just told me, she was just telling you, say what's up. She said it was a blast touring with you and she just wanted me to send you some love.
Yes, that's one of my favorites.
Well, Macy, I thank you for doing this with us.
Yeah, your patience is amazing. Thank you.
Thank you. Don't forget to check out my
song. She was here at like 6:30, like right? Waiting for us. Like,
and she just rolled with us. She ain't telling people like y'all ready to go. Tell them to wrap this shit. Like, you know, she just rolled with us. I appreciate it.
That's what's up. Okay, keeping us honest. Cool. No, yeah, but thank you for doing the show, and we appreciate it, and we're fans of yours, and we love you. On behalf of Laia and Shook Steve and Unpaid Bill, Von Tickalo, my name is Questlove, and this is another episode of Questlove Supreme. Thank you very much. See you on the next program.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonte. Make sure you keep up with us on Instagram at QLS and let us know what you think and who should be next to sit down with us. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. All right? Peace.
What's Love Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Celebrate the end of your workday with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy Thursday flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.